heroes getting found with 9 mils. It's simply in where your C's at. What's the deal? They on the hill pumping krills to keep they bellies filled. Lighting the air with heavy steel. Sights on the pretty sh** in life. Young soldiers trying to earn their next stripe. When the average minimum wage is 515, you best believe you gotta find a new grind to get cream. The white unemployment rate is nearly more than triple for black. So frontliners got their gun in your back. Bubble and crack, jewel theft and robbery to combat poverty and end up in the global jail economy. Stiffer stipulations attached to each sentence. Budget cutbacks but increased police presence. And even if you get out of prison, still living, join the other 5 million under state supervision. This is business. No faces, just lines and statistics. From your phone, your zip code, the SSI digits. The system break, man channeling women in the figures. Two columns for who is and who ain't. Numbers is hard and real and they never have feelings. But you push too hard, even numbers got limits. Why did one straw break the camel's back? Here's the secret. The million other straws underneath it. It's all mathematics.
Mighty most devil.
It's simple mathematics.
Check it out.
I revolve around science.
What are we talking about here? Mighty most devil.
It's simple mathematics.
Check it out.
I revolve around science.
What are we talking about here?
Mathematics.
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 Watch it.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
I down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour. Your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
KBOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO podcast, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
Hi, this is Peter Himmelman. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
You are listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm Althea Billings. Running on Air is the daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. This is the end of week 7 of this show, I think, and we have a special host roundtable for tonight. We want you to join our conversation. You can call the air room with questions about the process, about what's going on in our election right now. The number is 503-231-8187. You can message a question on the website. That's kboo.fm. You can also email us your questions at runningonair@kboo.org. I want to throw it over to the hosts that we have with us, the host with the most, really. Let's start here in the studio. Annette and Corey, say hey.
Hey, Althea.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
And we have Lenita as well on the phones with us.
Hi, Lenita.
Hey, good evening.
Hey. Hi. So, you know, it's so cool to get to talk to everybody, you know, because we've all been sort of scattered about with doing this project, taking on different roundtables and talking to candidates. I'm curious, maybe I'll start with Corey and Annette in here. You know, what was your first one like? What did you think of the whole process of interviewing candidates in the style that we've adopted?
Well, I really got a chance to interview Carmen Rubio, and I had read so much about her and her career, and it was really neat to just talk about her origin story, from being a kid who was in danger of homelessness and growing up with a family of migrant farm workers, and how she managed to get a college education through encouragement from her mother and teachers and people in Portland and in the Hillsborough area who actually, it was a very inspiring story.
Yeah. What do you think, Corey?
Yeah, it was very interesting for me because, honestly, I hadn't done interviews on the radio since, God, I think that was 2019, before the protests here in Portland. So, yeah, it was really interesting to hear from the different candidates. There's so much going on in District 3 right now.
Yeah, you did a lot of the District 3 ones.
Yeah, I think I was predominantly District 3. I think I did one mayoral. Yeah, all those races are very interesting to watch. There's a lot of people that came out. I mean, I think we ended up at like 118 candidates total or something like that.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, it's just there's so much to explore with what's going on. And the fact that we're like holding these interviews, it just kind of helps people, you know, learn who is running, learn what the issues truly are at the heart of what's going on right now here in Portland. So, yeah.
Yeah. Lenita, you did mostly mayoral interviews. I'm curious what you thought about, you know, before going into the project and now that we're getting near the end of it.
Well, I'm humbled by all the people that ran for mayor, and I'm really impressed with running on air as a format because I thought running on air and KBOO, we were one of the first platforms to really deconstruct Keith Wilson as a candidate for mayor and to see him slowly pick up traction from more traditional media outlets, it just reinforces to me how ahead we are at KBOO being a grassroots news organization and the brilliance of this format that we were able to be one of the first media outlets to notice someone like Keith Wilson, as well as respecting other candidates that didn't have the notoriety or name recognition like the ones that are currently on city council. I mean, we interviewed Mangus Matt, more traditional candidate, and that was fine, but it was nice to interview the so-called unrealized candidates like Sharon Asset and Beauty Alassam. That was really interesting.
Well, and that's kind of the whole thing with this new form of government and with the ranked choice voting. It's that, you know, these the folks that are more of a long shot, let's say, in the past, you know, maybe KBOO was one of the few places that wanted to talk to everybody like that, but there really is like no candidate who you can truly count out at this point because of the way that you know, people are going to be ranking their ballots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got my ballot today, and it's like a little phone book.
Me too. Yeah, I know.
I was going to say similar. I just got that booklet.
Did you?
What's beautiful about the state of Oregon is we don't have to pay postage.
Right.
We just, you know, fill that bad boy out and send it in. And it would be wonderful if other states in the union would adopt this mail-in voting, and it's unfortunate that, you know, we live in a society and a political climate where voting has been demonized in terms of making it easy for voters to vote, and that's disheartening.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah,
democracy is really really punched holes in it. Go ahead. I didn't mean to step on what you were saying.
Oh, no. I was just agreeing with you because I was thinking about, like, the system here compared to North Carolina, where I lived before I came to Oregon. And in North Carolina, you had to wait in lines, and it would take hours to vote in a presidential election. And that's just the way it was done, right? And here it's, you know, you get it in the mail and you can, like, talk to your family about who do you think should be for this race? Who do you think is the best? You can look them up online. You can do your research. You can make a more informed choice. And it's great. I think it's a wonderful system. And I just wish it was enacted across the country.
I kind of take it for granted. I've never not mail-in voted.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's been also interesting learning about this new system of ranked choice voting and, like, how to even participate in that. So, yeah, I've been having a blast with this. Yeah, like I was going to say earlier, that booklet, I just got that the other day, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, it's thick. And, yeah, 118 candidates. It's just never had this huge of a pool of candidates running at any time for Portland City Council or mayoral.
Yeah, well, I think for us as, you know, reporters and journalists and trying to educate people, we have to keep track of those, hopefully more so than the public actually does. Like, don't research all 118 candidates. Find out who's in your district and just talk about them. But yeah, I'm curious about, you know, in terms of like voter education, what are some of the things that people can look out for in terms of like knowing if they like somebody or not?
Yeah, and one thing that you have to be careful in the system is that even the person you pick for your sixth place vote, that could make or break somebody else's chance. So you got to make sure that everybody that you do rank in the system, you actually would want to see that person in the job.
Yeah, and like I didn't fully understand either before, you know, hearing about the ranked choice voting here, that you don't have to fill out all of your choices. I mean, you just pick who you feel is best.
Right.
In your opinion.
But I think what I've heard and what I understand about, you know, making the new system like work to the fullest and for your vote to have the most impact is to try to do as many rankings as possible.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I think they call it like your ballot is exhausted.
Yeah.
Is when they run out of places to defer it to. But you know, the whole point is that you can put your favorite person number one, even though maybe it's not everybody's favorite person, it's your favorite person.
Yeah.
Right. That's the beauty of it. And they have a whole sheet that they put in there that has like all the mistakes that they want you to avoid, like skipped rankings and overvotes and repeat rankings. And it's just a lot of information for people to absorb, I guess, in this. It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
Can I say, I think we can do it.
I believe in us.
I think there's some pessimism out there. You know, they think there's been certain people who've said, we're not smart enough to do this. I think we're smart enough.
I think so.
We're smart enough. We can come up with our rankings. It's not, you rank plenty of things all the time.
Our Portlanders are very smart.
Yeah.
That's right. We know what we're doing.
Lenita, any thoughts on since you got your ballot?
Well, it is a lot. And, you know, I do feel for people whose reading level is, it looks like it's at least a sixth grade, right? Sixth grade reading level.
Yeah.
And if English is not your first language, it can be overwhelming. But I always think about what brought us to this point. And what brought us to this point was years and years and years we had at-large voting where people would vote all over the city for, I think it was four city commissioners. And most of the votes came from one where other sides of town didn't get the representation,
right,
didn't get the city resources. I mean, look at East County. You still have streets in East County that's not even paved.
Hmm. Yeah, and they have the highest child poverty rate in District 1, too. That was something that we heard from the candidates in that district, that was their top concern, was child poverty.
And we look at what happened. I live in District 2, and the rapid gentrification, a lot of that was caused by policies instituted by city council that didn't represent us, that didn't live in our area. A lot of these decisions were made by people in other areas that what's best for them.
Right.
And now as a city, they're grappling with citywide issues. Like, look how poorly we are addressing the homeless issue, the houseless issues of individuals. And a lot had to do with the fact that people who made these decisions didn't live where the issues were happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. District representation is going to be major. And you know, there's been of course a lot of chatter about all the different changes that are going to fully come to fruition next year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think district representation is an easy, yes, we've finally done the right thing. You know,
right.
Sometimes we like to waffle around here in Oregon about whether we've done the right thing. District representation makes just a ton of sense.
I think so. I think also what would make sense is continuing this show after the election.
You think?
I do.
Seeing results, giving more analysis about where the races went and all that. Yeah.
Having the winners come in and talk about what they want to do and what's going to happen.
She's pitching me live on this, you guys.
I am.
This is the first time hearing of it, but gosh darn it if it isn't a good idea.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to have those who ran that didn't win come on and talk about their experiences and what they learned and what plans they have in the future.
Yeah. I mean, I really do find it quite inspiring that so many people signed up to be a part of it when there really isn't a roadmap of how it's going to go. And I mean, that's another thing that I'm so excited about, is that there isn't a roadmap. There isn't a kingmaker like there has been in years past, or a specific endorsement that once you get it, you know, that's it, you're done, you're in. I think that's, you know, there's something kind of inspiring about that. That's like a new foray, you know?
And one thing I noticed too is about the camaraderie between the candidates, which is kind of unusual in a political season. It was like, you know, when I had Dan and Mike in here, they're from two different worlds. You know, one was a lawyer and had been a judge and a law professor, and the other was a woodworker who helps build pods for homeless people. Mm. And they're from completely different worlds, but they were like seeing eye to eye on so many of the issues in the eastern part of Portland that they agreed on, that these are the important issues that we need to work on, and that we would work together well if we ended up being on council together. And I think a lot of the candidates are showing support for each other. Part of that too, from what I understand, is that they want to be in everybody else's good graces because they want their votes once they get on the council, because somebody's going to be elected council president, and that person is going to have a lot of power under the system where they're going to set the agenda for the meetings. They're going to decide what gets to come to a vote, what gets to be considered. So there is going to be, that's going to be interesting to see who the new council president will be.
Yeah. Yeah. Corey, what do you think?
Yeah, no, this whole situation, learning about this has just been like one of the biggest takeaways I've had from this program. It's like, literally, I didn't fully understand ranked choice voting when it was starting. Mm-hmm. And I definitely wasn't expecting so many candidates to come forward. I mean,
or for them to be nice to each other.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I'm up there in District 3, which, like, I'm over on, like, one of the most northern parts of it, over in Montevilla. And there are quite a few candidates that are local there in Montevilla and, like, understand a lot of what's going on. I think there was even, like, discussion about 82nd and some of the states of that, what's going on up there. Just hearing all the different topics, all the different issues that everybody else was also exploring on top of the ones that we presented from our questionnaire.
Well, okay, that was a question I wanted to ask you all as well. Have you noticed from talking to so many folks that there are common talking points or things that people who are running for office, like, generally agree about?
Yeah, I think that...
Well, I think they generally agree that the houseless issue has not been addressed efficiently or effectively, and most of them have different ideas. And you have these candidates talking about their solutions to these problems on one hand, and then on the other hand, you have actual city council members who want to divest from Multnomah County.
Right.
You know, which is a recent issue. And as many people know or don't know, that a lot of the social service in Portland are ran by Multnomah County.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's different. You know, they expect the city to do things, but like we learned by interviewing these candidates, whoever the new mayor is really won't be that much of a decision maker, because this mayor is going to hire a bureaucrat to run things. Mm. Right. Different.
Yeah.
But he's still in charge of the police.
That's, yeah. It's a totally different role and much less powerful, and yet everybody's still gunning for it who's currently on city council, which is interesting. I want to go to Annette and Corey. Did you guys notice any common points for folks? And not like everybody agrees, but like, I noticed some, so I can tell you mine if you want.
Definitely. I like Lenita was talking about the homelessness issue that or the houselessness issue and the cost of housing being such a problem and addressing poverty and addressing trying to lift the most vulnerable people in our community. That seemed to be the priority or the common line.
Yeah.
Yeah, affordability and then like the cost of living. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of people that were talking about the homeless situation, about the drug crisis right now, fentanyl out on our streets, and how bad that's getting, the mental health crises that we're seeing unfold on the street because there's so many people that are unhoused. Mm-hmm. Talking about some of the misconceptions behind a lot of what's going on too, a lot of people trying to say that like the drugs are what's causing the homelessness, when it's usually people falling into homelessness, and not all of them, but some of them falling into drug addiction because of the trauma they're experiencing,
Right.
And yeah, to hear several candidates during the interviews being able to articulate and address those topics, it was just actually really heartwarming to me, because it kind of shows that there are people that are, focused on what's going on here in Portland and actually thinking about how to address it properly.
Yeah. Well, something that I noticed doing these interviews and talking to people is easy. Maybe they're easy layups in a certain way. Like I've noticed probably a critical mass of people agreeing that Portland Street Response should be expanded 24/7 citywide, yeah, fully funded, get the Medicaid funding that is available if it goes 24/7. So, I mean, if I'm like casting my prediction for the future, I would say I think we're pretty likely to see PSR get an expansion, because that's something that council a bunch of the people running for council seem to agree about. And of course, we were asking about the critical energy infrastructure hub, yep, because that was something that we knew that our listeners from our survey really cared about, was the climate and the environment. And so it was, you do see that being an issue that a lot of candidates are informed about. I think the activists who really care about that issue have put out a strong showing to really get people to understand why that's important, why it's a priority. And, that's not something that we've really seen past councils really take on in a big way. But you're hearing like creative problem solving about it, and not just this sort of not saying like, oh, we'll kick them all out because the city doesn't have the power to do that, or saying, well, there's nothing we can do, but things in the middle to try to move the needle on those kinds of issues. So I think, seeing that people recognize that from a diversity of viewpoints and from all different parts of the city, I was quite glad to see all of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think also on the climate, a lot of the candidates are talking about getting more climate resilient, and what does it mean with all these wildfires and heat domes that we've been seeing, and then just more extreme weather patterns, and what can be done to keep Portland more livable as this continues.
And keep people safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lenita, any thoughts?
Well, I have, I guess my concern with the focus on houselessness, mm-hmm, I got my ballot to get today along with my property taxes.
Uh-huh.
And my property taxes are going up quite a bit.
Oof.
And with the focus on houselessness and drug addiction, I think about the other issues that Portlanders are faced that are not getting addressed, because our focus is always crisis-driven.
Mm.
And when you talk about Portland being livable and the city working well, we still have streets that have not been paved. We still have issues with the police,
mm-hmm,
police-community relations. We don't have the kind of community policing. It was great to hear all the candidates agree sort of on the concept of community policing. How do you make that happen? It's a totally different thing. Also, I didn't hear a whole lot of people talking about what's going on with the Portland public school system. We still have great gaps in testing between different children of color, different children, economic group.
Right.
Certainly our children have not recovered from COVID education fully. I didn't hear a lot of people talking about that. So the houselessness issue and the drug addiction issue just sucked all the oxygen out of the room. And there are many other issues that Portland needs to address from a city level that we didn't even touch on. The candidates really didn't even touch on as well.
Yeah, I think that's, I definitely experienced, you know, some folks who came onto our show ready to really hammer on that particular issue. And it almost seems like there's competition, somewhat of like, no, I'm the guy who cares the most, and I'm going to take the most extreme thing that nobody's even talking about right now. They're not even willing to say it, but I'll say it because I think it's a problem and I'm listening to you, you know? Like, you do get some of that, especially around that issue. I mean, I think it's would be hard to say that it's not a priority, but you know there is this sort of like race to be the one who cares the most intensely or has the most fleshed out or extreme plan to make it all go away.
You know, and that's kind of interesting in what you're saying there too, because it reminds me of a project I've been working on entitled Is Portland Dying? It's a documentary series, and it's basically exploring how a lot of this rhetoric that you're hearing about the homelessness, the drugs, the mental illness, and all that has become the focus to try and scapegoat away from the true issues. Affordability, racism, ableism, ageism, discrimination against disabilities, you know, the invisible disabilities that are keeping people from actually being able to have a decent life, to be able to actually participate fully. And yeah, it's kind of scapegoating, in my opinion. And it's a lot of trying to be like, well, I can address this, but can you truly address this by yourself? I mean, it's going to take everybody coming on board to address all the issues at once. You got to look at them as, because they're all interconnected in deeply profound ways.
Yeah, and it's a real, you know, you have to build a broader coalition to get things done in this new form of government than you do right now. And, you know, you're not going to be handed, the mayor's not going to hand you the Parks Bureau, and you're like, all right, I'm the parks guy, I'm going to do parks, you know? You have to find seven other people to get on board with whatever you think parks should be, you know?
Mm-hmm. This administrator that the new mayor is going to hire is going to have quite the plate of work to do.
It's a big job.
Yeah.
It is a big job. I mean, I hope we hire somebody really good.
It's going to be like a super person.
Yeah.
Superhero.
I was looking at that too. It does look like they're going to be taking the bulk of the work away from the mayor and a few other.
Us mere mortals have 24 hours a day, but to make this new government work, the city administrator needs like 48 hours a day.
Oh, that's going to take a major amendment.
Yeah. we're going to need a supermajority of council to bend time and space for our city administrator. But yeah, it is. It's a big job. It's a big shift. I'll ask you guys about this at the end, my hopes and dreams, but my hope is that Portlanders can have patience while we build something new, you know, I think there's a lot of times, and I would just, you know, I anticipate there being rhetoric out there about, you know, within 6 months of the new government coming into effect, that would basically say like, it didn't work.
Yeah,
you guys screwed it up. This is no good.
Just like measure, well, they'll say it's just like measure 110.
I was about to say
like
that.
Like it's another experiment, but at the same time, if you don't try something new, you're not gonna grow. You're not gonna see if things can get better.
And in some ways, we're doing something old. Like the thing we were doing is so old, it's ancient. And then we're doing something that to every other city in the nation is old.
Yeah,
and more normal.
Yeah,
The district representation is pretty much the norm in most other cities.
And you're bringing up Measure 110. Exactly. Like there was a lot of rhetoric that was thrown around about what 110 did. It decriminalized all drugs. No, it was user amounts. It was supposed to have started treatment programs for the people that are suffering from substance abuse disorder, and.
But those weren't funded.
It wasn't funded for over a year. That money just sat there while all this bureaucratic stuff happened behind the scenes, and it took over a year for any of those treatment facilities to get the money to get up off the ground. Mm-hmm. And at that point, drug user amounts of drugs had been decriminalized. And so, yeah, we were also getting hit by the fentanyl that was sweeping across the country. Mm-hmm. So it was just a perfect storm. And for people to be like, measure 110 was the cause of all this, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, statistically speaking, mm-hmm. certainly. Well, what do you think, guys? You want to take a little musical break and we'll come back?
Can we dance?
Can we dance? Okay, yeah, okay. Hopefully we can dance. I want to let our listeners know you are listening to Running on Air here at KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Althea Billings. Today we've got a funky, different episode for you. We're speaking with the Running on Air hosts themselves. I have here with me Annette Newell, Corey Elia, and Lenita Duke. You are welcome to join our conversation. We'd love to hear what you have to say. Call your questions into the air room at 503-231-8187 or by messaging us on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm. We're going to take a little musical break, but we'll be back in just a moment. Support for Running on Air comes from KBOO members and the League of Women Voters. More information about the candidates on your ballot can be found on the League of Women Voters of Portland's website, lwvpdx.org. The League has videos of candidate interviews and forums, as well as links to candidates' written answers to questions and explanations of ballot measures. That's lwvpdx.org. We are back on a special edition of Running on Air. We're talking with the hosts of Running on Air, the people who've been talking to the people, you know them. That's who we're talking to. If you would like to join our conversation, please feel free. Call me in the air room. I'm the one sitting here, 503-231-8187. During the break, we got a call from Joan. who brought up a great point that I would love to share with you. Joan mentioned that she agreed with what you said, Corey, that focusing on the most visible aspects of the homelessness crisis isn't focusing on the core issue, which is that rents are too high. And, you know, talking about how there's a growing demographic of older women who are actually living on the street as a result of this. And, you know, that some of this stuff goes back to the real estate industry and corporations and things like that. So I wanted to put that to you guys as well. And along with one of my observations, and this has kind of come about, you know, in some of the more recent ones that I've done, but there is a lot of talk about supply side solutions to the housing crisis. So we need more housing. We need to build more houses is one way to address it. I've heard a couple candidates mention, you know, more of the, you know, government interventions in terms of like social housing or things like that. I'm just curious, you know, with what Joan said, what you guys think.
Yes, I also really appreciate the question, Joan. Thank you. I actually, one of my jobs is a housing and outreach coordinator for a nonprofit. When it comes to the rampant unaffordability of Portland, it's a major issue. You are having issues finding a studio nowadays for under $1,000. It's ridiculous. And added on top of that is the stagnant cost of living. Literally, like, the cost of living is going up, but wages are not. So you're having this huge gap develop between that. And a lot of people are falling onto the street, especially people that are elderly. Minority populations, LGBT, black, all forms of different, and veterans even. And a lot of people don't really, like, think about all the causes behind why a person ends up on the streets. It's not just one person's issues is the same for the next person, you know. Everybody's life is unique. Everybody's situation is unique.
And why are the prices of homes so high here compared to so many other parts of the country?
Actually, there was a reporting, if I remember correctly, from Street Roots back in, I believe it was either 2018 or 19, and it was talking about how investment corporations, hedge funds, all that from Wall Street went and bought up a lot of the houses in the U.S. market. And that also applied here to Portland pretty much at the same rate. I think it was over 52% or whatever the housing market was captured by Wall Street and turned it straight into investment properties. And literally that just basically took away what the spirit behind the home was, really, was, you know, a place for families to be able to actually to survive and potentially thrive.
Yeah, I know that's something that Senator Merkley talks a lot about, wanting to stop the hedge funds from, you know, enact some kind of federal legislation to prevent that kind of predatory practice.
Yeah, I think it's 10%, somewhere around that, 11% is what property owners can increase the rent annually right now.
Yeah.
And
that's still a lot, though.
When you're talking about a $1,000 unit, that's $100.
Yeah.
And that's extreme amount of increase of rent for somebody, especially if their wages, they're
are not going up by 10%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are just working, you know, jobs, just slaving away and just not getting anywhere because everything else is becoming rampantly unaffordable.
Yeah, I did get some idea that there's hope out there, though, just from seeing these really impressive people who are stepping up and wanting to serve the community and serve the city, and just the energy that they're bringing. And you know, it's probably going to be a learning curve when they get in there. The next year is going to be full of all kinds of twists and turns, I'm sure, as we see all these people step up to the plate in the new city council. And a lot of them are probably not going to have government experience, so it is going to be definitely a learning curve for them.
I have another note from Arthur, who called talking about affordable housing, which maybe we've pivoted off of that a little bit, but he does make a good point, which is to say that a lot of times when we're talking about affordable housing, that mostly means apartments, and it's not the same thing as a home.
Exactly.
And being able to, you know, and he was talking about a neighbor of his who has solar panels, who keeps chickens, and, you know, regardless of what your space looks like, you know, like that ability to have, and I think I have had maybe a candidate or two talk about affordable home ownership as an important thing as well. But that's another piece of this.
Like hearing that.
Well, you know, we talk about the rise in rent. Let us not forget the homeowners, because every year property taxes rise.
Right.
And for us, it's just like a yearly increase in rent.
Right.
Yep.
Because our property taxes go up, and if your property taxes are tied to your mortgage, that means your monthly mortgage goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So what we are experiencing, what renters are experiencing, and I know this is very unpopular, but every year I vote no on any money measure, and I'm thinking, who's voting yes for this? Because it's impacting folks with a limited income, fixed income, and I didn't see any of that addressed by any candidate.
I mean, it's an important point, you know. And it's a shame that a lot of times that rhetoric gets all lumped in together, and that, like, oh, if you own a home, then you're suddenly, you know, automatically in like a higher income bracket.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, the people who, like, I'm thinking in my neighborhood, there are people from several generations, they own homes in the same neighborhood. You know, and that's really nice to see. But is that going to be realistic for the next generation, where they can live, you know, a block away from mom and dad if they want to? And
yeah,
is that going to be a reality?
I was born and raised here. I remember hearing from my grandfather that he bought the house that I basically grew up at. Same with my mom, that they bought that house in like the 70s for $40,000. And he was able to do that with his retirement and all that. And by the time he passed away in 2017, that house was estimated over $400,000,
wow.
Tenfold, and within decades. So, yeah it's right there.
It's a complicated thing. Well, anyway, I don't mean to keep us on the topic for too long. Lenita, you wanted to talk about how respectful the local candidates were. Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, one of our other panelists mentioned it. I just want to expand on it and give props to how all the candidates were respectful of each other. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear a lot of outright lies like we hear on the national stage. And I was really impressed with how respectful they were of each other. Even the so-called lesser-known candidates were respectful of the three candidates that sit on the city council who have an edge. And now that we have an outsider getting a lot of traction, I'm talking about Keith Wilson, even he's respectful of all the other candidates. So that was nice to see. And would they call that Portland nice?
Well, Portland nice, I think, isn't that like a little disingenuous if someone's Portland nice? They like maybe don't mean it. But I've definitely noticed what you're talking about. And I think that it is, local politics is wacky, like, if you look at it for a really long time, like I think all of us do, but I personally find that it, like, gives me a lot more hope, and I understand so much more readily how, you know, folks around me are making change for our community, compared to national politics, which sometimes it feels like we go around in circles on the same stuff.
Yeah.
For sure, and it's loggerheads right now at the national level, you know, they're so entrenched, but...
Hopefully. Impasses over things that we all agree on, you know. Yeah. How can it be? I'm not telling a new story, you know. Far be it from me to tell a new story.
Yeah, but in these districts, since there's going to be three people elected in that pile of candidates in each
pile
district,
of candidates,
the never-ending spigot of candidates.
Oh, there we go.
Whoa, spigot is good. I'm writing that down.
They recognize that, hey, I'm going to have some coworkers here, and I'm going to look around, and I'm going to prop these other people up because I think I'd work well with them, and I see eye to eye with them. And so it seems like they're kind of campaigning together. in little groups, you know.
You know, it's nice to see.
Yeah.
One thing that I really found interesting too was the diversity of the backgrounds of the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Like there were people coming from like the nonprofit sector. There's people coming from teaching, from retired mechanic, I think was one of them. One of them was a journalist at one point. And yeah, just so much different background knowledge between all the different candidates and how they are looking at the different situation here in Portland and how to like address it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that some of the endorsements from different groups, you know how they do endorsements with candidates, how different they are, you know, who they're recommending.
Well, one thing that this is part of talking to candidates off mic, you know, because they're in the building and they're talking with us at KBOO. You know, for so many first-time candidates, a lot of them didn't necessarily know to go after endorsements. Or even if you see, you know, there's a bunch of different interest groups and publications that have asked people to complete surveys. And sometimes it'll say like, oh, so-and-so didn't complete the survey. And you're like, oh my God, do you hate them? And it's like, no, they were asked to complete like 200 surveys, all of which were slightly different. All of that to say, I just have sympathy for them in trying to figure out how to run a race. We're getting some feedback on Lanita there. Annette and Corey in the room. You know, with all those endorsements. Sorry, Annette, as you were saying.
Oh, yeah. I just, it's going to be, I think, quite a learning experience for our fair city.
Yes.
To get through this election cycle. There's so much going on at the national level, at the federal level, at the state level. And then these very important decisions about our Portland government going forward. And ranked choice voting is also on the ballot for all of Oregon, too. So
right.
I'll be curious to see if other counties want to follow, other communities in Oregon want to follow Portland's example. There are several other communities that we actually started ranked choice voting.
Benton County got to it before we did.
Right.
I have a question for you all. Were there, you know, after talking to so many folks, are there questions that you wish you got to ask? Unasked questions.
A few of them for me probably would be centered around like the educational aspect of what's going on here in Portland. Because a lot of the questions that I had generated were, you know, towards climate, towards housing, all that stuff. But, you know, there's been like there's been a major disinvestment from like education, you know, over the years and stuff, not only from higher education, but public education as well, you know, and that's having major impacts. And just to try and explore those topics more would be something that I would really want to try and do.
Yeah.
And going along those lines, too, I was thinking maybe talking about the test scores and the emphasis on the test scores and how they're lower than they were before the pandemic. And what is that really indicative of? I mean, does it mean that our kids aren't learning, or they're not receptive to learning, or that there's too much absenteeism, I think, was one of the other reasons that was possibly cited, and why is that happening?
Mm-hmm. Lanita, were there, since you've done the interviews that you did, were there questions that you wish you would have asked?
There were very few questions related to some of the issues our senior citizens are experiencing here in Portland. I do not remember anyone addressing issues of senior citizens deal with. Also, issues of regular low-income homeowners and the issue of lowering property taxes. None of those were addressed. I did see some youth-oriented answers and questions, but for a great many demographics, the issues that they were going through was just overshadowed by the houselessness issues. But that means that those issues are still just as relevant.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, you have people having great difficulty paying their water bill. I didn't hear anyone talk about necessarily what's going on with their water bill, what's going on with waste management. Those bills get higher and higher. You know, I didn't hear anyone address those issues.
Yeah. Well, you know, thinking about unasked questions, and maybe it's maybe under-asked questions from my perspective, but, you know, wanting to... Part of what I think is important to get at when we're trying to interview candidates, there's a lot of things that people say that they're going to do, and then it's like, does that actually bear out in practice? And, you know, we'll launch 100,000, you know, posts on Twitter about, you know, broken campaign promises. And I'm not saying that anybody's going to do that, but I think part of what you want to know about a candidate is what their ethic is and how they're going to react to situations. And, you know, maybe that's part of, you know, some of the intense feelings around the current city council is that it's maybe, you know, people behave in ways that you weren't necessarily expecting. But police accountability was one that I was definitely, you know, wishing I had more time. Because here's the thing. For when I started thinking about this, of like how were we going to get all these candidates in here, I was like, we could do five people in an hour. We'll get to know them on a deep level in an hour, five people all talking, which was not a good idea. Four is a lot. But it's, and even, you know, two or three people, like the hour flies by. So I didn't always get a chance to ask about police accountability and how folks would approach putting together that board, which is something that the new council will get to do, and, you know, hopefully setting off on a much better foot for the future when it comes to Portland and the relationship with its police force.
And especially because the new council does have the ability to restore the oversight board to what it was that we voted in instead of what it's gotten watered down to.
It's a great point, Corey. That's a great point. I hear you.
They have the option. It's there. It's just if they're genuine enough to actually do something about it, you know.
Well, and, you know, it may not be their number one
issue
right now. I think they're, I mean, you know, you also hear people talking about the need for more staff, the need for more, like, for them having district offices.
Right. Are they going to have offices in their districts, too?
Which is still, I think, an open question. I mean, they'll get to vote that they do get to, I think, when they get in there, but...
And if I was reading correctly, the current council, each one has basically a team behind them of people working, and then it's sounding like that's going to get diminished down to possibly just one person.
Yeah, one person who's devoted to each counselor, and then one shared person for the district. Which, you know, that
That doesn't seem logical to me, but it kind of seems burdensome on that one person, you know.
They were discussing on the commission about the, as far as the offices, they were looking at funding it, but decided it would be $5 million extra dollars to have offices in each district, or that was the number that they were banding about, saying that was too much.
Yeah, well, I had heard some folks talking about like having a space in like a local community center or something, or just somewhere where, you know, you can have.
It seems like there's a lot of office space that's available, but, right?
That is a good point, Annette. Nobody's talking about. No, they're talking too much about that part.
And you know, the city owns properties throughout Multnomah County. They can just sit up, put up a desk and a chair at the Park Bureau or some of their other properties that they own. I don't know why they're making it such a barrier. You know, all you need is with computers now, you can meet at Starbucks.
That's so true.
Very true.
I had heard candidates also talking about, and this might have been District 1 folks, talking about wanting to have, you know, a full council meeting out in District 1. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, if there's constituents out there that don't have the capacity to trek downtown to testify, that mm-hmm. that could be something. This might be stuff that we hear coming back 3 years from now. So I just want you to know that we mentioned it when in 3 years they start talking about that again.
I do like that idea, though, from, you know, holding council meetings in the districts, like, why not just all the districts at different times? That way everybody can have, like, a chance to literally speak to what their issue is locally to them.
Yeah.
Or issues.
Now, these council members are only going to serve 2-year terms.
Well, half of them serve a 2-year term.
Is it half that? And
yeah.
The half or?
I think they are 4-year terms, but the councilors that are going to be elected from District 3 and 4 are up for a 2-year term so that we don't actually ever have to do what we're doing right now ever
again.
Which is
everybody all being elected at once.
Electing 12 people. Don't worry, guys. In the future, we'll only have to elect 6 people, which is the normal amount and doesn't freak anybody out at all. So we'll only have to learn about 50 people, you know, like it's probably still going to be a situation like that. But yeah, I think that's what I understand about it, is so that they can be offset like that.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of continuity.
Yep. Continuity. Yeah. Continuity. Yeah. That's going to be important. Imagine turning over 12 new people every 2 years.
Or every 4.
Right. Yeah. Night. Right.
Yeah. It's like Congress when, you know, they have to run for a re-election all the time.
So well over there.
All they do is fundraise.
That's all
they have time for.
I mean, and that's the whole small donor elections thing, mm-hmm. you know, that's another one of the barometers of success of who's gotten their message out there or who knows enough people who have $5 who wanted to support them in that way. It'll be interesting to see how the new council might tweak the small donor elections program going forward, based on how things have shaken out this time.
Yeah, my understanding is the funding wasn't as robust as it should have been, or maybe it was that there were so many candidates. But
I think it was a mix of both. I think it wasn't as robust enough as they thought they needed, and there were far more candidates than they thought were going to come forward. And yeah, from what I heard, it was drained pretty quick. I don't know if it still has any funds left in it, what's going on with it. Like, I haven't heard about that for over a month now.
Yeah. I mean, there was the swapping situation, yeah. which I think they're still kind of hashing out whether or not that broke the law. And it's kind of interesting, you know, to see something like the Small Donor Elections Program, which was really built to kind of counter the impulses and the way that Portland City Hall has worked, and that it is, you know, people with money or people with friends with money who find themselves in the West Hills and you know, gallop on down to city council. So, you know, with a small donor election program was meant to sort of give a boost to folks who have, you know, more of a grassroots pull. But, you know, with having district representation now, and only having to run a district campaign, maybe that's something that's not as necessary.
Mm.
Yeah. Or maybe isn't even sustainable. That's my worry.
Yeah, sustainability there would be my biggest worry as well.
Something we'll have to think about. Well, we have a couple minutes left, and before we go, maybe I want you guys to predict the future. Any like takeaways from the experience so far? Your hopes and dreams for Portland? Anything like that? I would love to hear. Lenita, do you want to start?
Yeah, I hope that we can get away from just having the issue of houselessness take up all the oxygen in the room. I'd like to see other issues addressed, as I indicated, and as the panelists indicated, there's so many other issues of education, affordability of housing. Once you buy a house, having the ability to stay in that house,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to see the rise in property taxes addressed. I think some of these property taxes need to be sunsetted.
Hmm.
And we don't need a new property tax measure every year.
Yeah.
I'd like to see just some livability issues like the rise in water bills and, again, waste management issues, the rise in our garbage bills. And these are city issues mm-hmm. addressed, because the whole issue of social service, again, that, you know, that lies with Multnomah County. And of course, I want to see the city of Portland and Multnomah County kiss and make up.
Oh, mm-hmm. gosh, yeah. Okay, kissing and making up over in here into the studio.
You know, I think that overwhelmingly what I felt was, okay, there's a message from all these candidates that, yes, this is a community that has some crises going on, that has some really serious problems, but over and over again you hear, but I love Portland. We love Portland. We love our city. So that's the part that's really inspiring, is that you have these people who really, really care about this community and really want to devote themselves to it. And I'm really excited to see how you know, to see all these new people coming in and bringing their new energy and their ideas and where the community is going to go next. I think it's going to be really awesome to watch.
Yeah. And Corey, what do you think?
Basically, for Portland, like, my hopes and dreams are that, you know, people are happy, healthy, thriving, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes that might be unattainable, but still, there's just so many different opportunities here in Portland to literally work together as a community to come behind some of these issues and try and address them. And yeah, I just want to see people happy, healthy, surviving, thriving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I, for one, have really, really enjoyed doing Running on Air, and I really appreciate all of you guys entertaining the idea.
I'm so glad you came up with it. It was your brainchild.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Maximum effort, maximum reward. But also, I want to give a shout out to the listeners and the folks who've been calling into the show. Like, we've gotten such a wonderful response, and hopefully got some of your main issues addressed by folks on air, and really love to keep that dialogue open, you know, both with our show, but again, thinking about my hopes and dreams, keeping the dialogue open with our city, having patience as change takes shape, mm-hmm. and, you know, we gotta help each other make it happen, you know? We're gonna mm-hmm. do it. It's gonna happen. We might as well be a part of it. I want to thank you all for being here with me. We got to wrap this baby up for what a wonderful other episode of Running on Air.
Thank you, Althea.
Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Althea.
I'm going to do my little lockout, but thank you, Lenita. Appreciate you coming. This has been... Oh, lost her. Wonderful. You've been listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with Annette Newell, Corey Elia, and Lenita Duke, the host of Running on Air. We've been reflecting on our series so far. We have 6 more episodes planned, so don't worry, it's not over. Stay tuned. You can find all of the episodes of Running on Air on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Shout out to our editor, Eric Leuschner. Tune in to the next episode of Running on Air. It's Monday, October 21st at 7 p.m. with candidates from District 1. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Hello, KBOO listeners. Come join us at the station Friday, November 1st for KBOO's Dia de los